Welcome to episode 47. This is going to be a cookie episode. It's going to be under 30 minutes and we're talking about jealousy. I'm actually going to walk you through the jealousy workbook, which is by Kathy Labriola. So thank you, Kathy. We are using all of your exercises. It has got some amazing stuff and I actually went through it. So I pulled it apart and went through it and used it for my own, you know, processing and trying to get better at this whole thing. And you know, this applies to people in non-monogamous relationships as well as monogamous relationships. And in fact, there's a really nice relationship orientation exercise quiz, you know, tool to understand your desires a little bit better and get clear on them. I think, you know, people have asked us, how did you know that you wanted non-monogamy? And it's a tricky question to answer because it is a very personal thing. For me, monogamy hadn't been modeled in a successful way and I hadn't experienced monogamy successfully. So it only made sense to not try to repeat that structure because it kept failing. And I was like, why would I keep doing the same thing expecting different results? So a big part of it was that for me. It was like, I just need to do something different. I just want to try something different. And then the other part for me was I just really enjoyed being single. I like my independence and I have a lot of freedom that comes with knowing that my partner doesn't depend on me and I don't depend on them. That's a big thing for me. I can become extremely codependent. So I was in, you know, endeavoring to maintain some semblance of independence, which in a relationship, maybe you can call it interdependence. But it was just, there were a whole lot of things that came up for me and I met Greg. He was on the same path. And so it just landed for both of us. It was just a timing thing. I wouldn't have been able to do this 5 years ago or 10 years ago. It was just where I was at. The other thing that people talk to me about, obviously, is jealousy. And jealousy was something that I was a huge denier of way back at the beginning of the relationship because I was like, no, no, I'm too evolved. I am too mature. Me in my like early 30s, I'm like, oh, I'm not a jealous person. And it was a bit of a badge of honor. You know, I was like, I'm not jealous. But there are many things that I didn't want to be because I associated that with something negative. And I didn't want to be a clingy girlfriend. I didn't want to be a crazy girlfriend. And I didn't want to be a jealous girlfriend or girl just in general. So there were many traits that I tried to create distance from, as much distance as possible. And what's been interesting is that I have experienced jealousy. And, you know, I've always probably put jealousy under the label of an insecurity. But I think jealousy now stands on its own. And I think that there are connections with insecurities, but I don't think that one belongs to the other. They are mutually exclusive. So that's been kind of this important thing where I've figured out how to embrace it. And, you know, it was a similar journey that I had with my relationship with eating, where I kind of got to this point where I had been doing all the diets and I'd been up and down and it had been extremely frustrating and I didn't feel like I was getting anywhere. And I felt like I had no control around food. Like I just knew that I wasn't eating in a healthy way. Like it was disordered eating. I just didn't know exactly to what degree. It didn't feel like I needed to, you know, go and see a therapist about it or like I wasn't anorexic or bulimic. But when I came and kind of attached myself to the label of like, you're a binge eater, that almost set me upon the path of figuring it out and figuring out more about myself. The period before that where I was pushing away the titles and I wasn't embracing them and wasn't accepting them and was, you know, also afraid of labeling myself because I didn't want to put myself in a box or define myself by a label. You know, that was a really big part of it. I didn't want to use a label that one, I wasn't 100% sure of or thought that people would, I would just play into it. You know, it was like, but what I found was that just accepting that that might be me allowed me to then go down and hunt and become curious almost about what that would mean and what I would need to do and test some things out and just do things differently. And so that was when I really changed my eating. And it really kind of has been the same thing with jealousy. I was a jealousy denier. I didn't like to use the word. I thought that I was better than that. So obviously I had some beliefs around jealousy and some shame around it. And judgment, self-judgment in a massive way. I've always been like that. And then I also was really attached to the idea of compersion, which, you know, you could maybe, if you want to put it simply, argue that compersion is the opposite of jealousy. Compersion is getting joy from your partner getting joy. and in a non-monogamy sense, that would mean that when they're with other people, dating, having sex, just connecting, doing their own thing, you experience a lot of joy. Now, logically, yes, I love that I get to give Greg that freedom. And I know that it makes him really happy. And it's been this really bizarre, like, twist of events where he becomes very loving and grateful towards me when he gains that freedom, or not gains it, but experiences it, right? When it's in close vicinity to an actual date happening. And he's like, God, I really appreciate this and I love you and I love that freedom. And he becomes very affectionate. And what I experienced was that became bizarre to me because it felt like he was pitying me and he felt bad and it was a guilt thing. So I really rejected that. I struggled and I still do. But it's just been this long journey of figuring out my insecurities, my fear and jealousy and what the heck to do with it. And the, you know, process of being alone while your partner is on a date. For me, I'm going to have a date on my own and I'm going to have a bath and I'm going to drink a glass of wine and watch Netflix and I'm going to go on a date with someone else and I'm going to distract myself. I'm going to watch Netflix. I'm going to stay up all night. I'm going to go to bed and try and sleep. It's like I've done many, many things. And I had this really nice experience where Multiamory, they're a podcast, they're great. If you haven't heard of them or listened to them, go and listen to them. They did a two-parter episode on tools to help jealousy. Something along those lines, like tools or exercises for jealousy. And it wasn't to avoid or not experience jealousy. It was an aid for jealousy. And that was a really big kind of takeaway where it was like, we cannot stop it, but we can help. And you can figure some stuff out about yourself. And they went through different categories. And some of it was like, you know, inner work, because you've got this opportunity from jealousy to identify stuff that is going on within you. Then there was just pure distraction was some of it, you know, like find ways to occupy yourself and find other things to do and enjoy your time alone. So there were some different categories like that and they worked through it and Greg was out on a date and rather than sitting on my phone scrolling endlessly or watching Netflix or ordering takeouts and, you know, really I was kind of numbing out. I was looking for some other sources of dopamine to make me feel good when I wasn't feeling very good and sure of myself. I was feeling a little bit shaky. You're like standing on a cliff edge and you've got your stomach in your throat and you're like, fuck, I'm going to fall. And you're just waiting for the fall to come, waiting for a gust of wind. That was kind of the experience for me. So I would do everything to take my mind off it. And ultimately I listened to this podcast when he was on a date one night and I was like, I actually need to focus on the feeling. I actually need to feel the feeling and I need to flesh it out and I need to open it up and just confront it. That was huge. And it was a really positive experience. While he was on a date, I felt like I was able to sit with it. And as it always is, facing it suddenly made me realize how much of a big deal I'd turned it into and how much my fear of it had actually magnified what I thought was going to happen. And when I just fucking sat down and opened the door and looked at it, it was like, this is okay. Everything's all right. Like I'm good. And so that was a wake up call for me where it's like, if you keep running, it's going to keep feeling scary and you're going to keep feeling like you're going to fall off that cliff. If you just stop and sit and think and really head on, dig into it and figure it out. And maybe, you know, I don't even want to say figure it out because you can't. I think this is an ongoing process. But if you just sit with it, I think that you can actually gain freedom from it, right? So let's get into the jealousy workbook. The pieces that we're going to talk through are kind of the beginning of the workbook, but I just love them. They really struck me. And before we kind of dive into it, one of the things that she works through is figuring out what are the actual emotions that you're experiencing? Because jealousy is a big word, right? Any emotion that's, you know, kind of the big emotions like happy, sad, jealous, mad, they are very basic words to explain emotions that can be far more specific. And I've always liked to use the emotions wheel. And it's a nice starting point. If you've not seen the emotions wheel, pull your phone up right now and Google it. And it just comes up with a wheel. And there's different areas for different types of emotions. And they kind of span out as you get wider in the wheel and become more specific. And it just helps you get a better vocabulary for what you're feeling and allows you to be more specific. So that's a really important piece where if you are feeling a feeling, get good at identifying what feeling that is. And just jealous or sad doesn't cut it. You need to get a little bit more specific. And when you can identify your emotions, that is kind of half the work done. And I mean, I'm like, and then you're done. You're not, but that's a big piece of the puzzle. And it can really help. It can just help give you words and tools to communicate with other people, to communicate with yourself, to better understand yourself, and to just give yourself a range of emotions because you're a complex being. And if we get trapped within a couple of, you know, like three or four emotions that we spend a lot of time in, that can be limiting and it can feel like you're potentially not going to get anywhere with that. But if you can find specific things that can suddenly open your eyes to how specific scenarios or experiences actually are going to make you feel different to other scenarios, even though they might be within the same category of feeling disappointed or sad, right? You might have a different feeling where, you know, even things like understanding sympathy versus empathy, like there are tiny little specific differences, but they can be really big. And I think that that's what happens with identifying your emotions. So that's one of the skills that you need before we kind of get into this. Okay. Clarify your relationship orientation. For people who are not sure if they could be non-monogamous or if monogamy is going to work for them, this is a really nice starting point. And essentially, it's reflecting on your own experience. So ideally, it's like if you go through the exercise, you can assess if you're going to be satisfied with a monogamous relationship or not. And you can kind of figure out like, where am I on that spectrum? Because there is a spectrum of totally polyamorous, multiple romantic relationships and sexual relationships to fully monogamous. And you know, like if you want to be on the extreme end, it's like you are only with one person throughout your entire life. I would argue if you've had multiple monogamous relationships, you're a serial monogamous, as Esther Perel would call it, that means you're not maybe down that extreme end of monogamy. Maybe you're actually a little bit closer to the other end of the spectrum. So even thinking about that can help open your mind up to the possibilities and the fact that it's not just monogamy or non-monogamy. There's quite a broad range. Okay, so thinking about your monogamous relationships, I'm going to ask you some questions. Did you feel safe and secure due to sexual exclusivity in that relationship? Did you experience deeper intimacy? Did you feel more comfortable? Were you able to be honest with your partner about your feelings and needs? Did you feel sexually satisfied? Do you believe that your partner was honest about you, with you about their feelings and needs? Did you find yourself being more focused and productive in your work and other life activities? Did you feel that you and your partner were a good team and became more effective and creative through the synergy of that relationship than you had been on your own? Did you enjoy spending most or all of your free time with your partner during that relationship and spending very little time alone or with other friends? So you essentially go through those and you can give yourself points. So every time you get a yes, it's 10 points. If you get 40 points or more, and that was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, that's 9 questions, then 40 points is like obviously about half or just under. Then it might kind of indicate that you're maybe going to be down to the monogamous end of the spectrum. Okay. Here's the way that you complete the assessment. More questions. Did you struggle with sexual and romantic desires towards other people while in that relationship? Did you feel bored with your sexual relationship? Did you want more romance and excitement in your relationship? Did you long for more emotional intimacy than your partner could provide? Did either you or your partner cheat and have sex with someone else during the course of that relationship? Did you ever feel suffocated and try to create more distance, saying things like, I need more space, I need more time alone, I feel too controlled, I want more privacy? Did you sometimes feel there was some important component missing from the relationship? Did this relationship end because you lost interest in your partner after a short time and wanted to pursue a new relationship with someone else? Same thing, give yourself 10 points. And if you get more than 40 points, you might be orientated towards the non-monogamy end of the spectrum. Okay. Where do you fall on the relationship orientation scale? Now, there's like a bit of an argument about whether the style of relationship that you want is an orientation, whether you are just like, that's the way you are, or if it is more of a choice. I'm not going to get into that argument. I don't really care for it. I believe it's more of a choice. But hey, that's based on my limited my limited experience and knowledge. So let's just consider that there is an orientation and there's sexual and relationship, right? So sexual is heterosexual to homosexual, and relationship is monogamous to like polyamorous. So essentially there's another set of questions. I'm going to throw these questions at you. Have you found it difficult to remain sexually exclusive with a partner for 2 years or more? Have you practiced what is sometimes called serial monogamy, being exclusive with one person for a period of time, but ending each relationship in order to pursue someone new? Do you enjoy the security and stability of a monogamous relationship, but also long for more romance and passion? Have you often found yourself in a relationship where one partner has a much greater desire for sex than the other? Have you had one relationship after another where some components of the relationship are very satisfying, but you experience scarcity in some other areas? For example, not enough time, not enough intimacy, not enough common interests. So if you've got a lot of yeses there, then you might have a mixed relationship orientation where you could be happy with monogamous or an open relationship, depending on the specific situation. Okay, step three. This is the final step. Examine your experiences in open relationships. Obviously, this applies if you've been in a consensually non-monogamous relationship. But I'll throw them at you anyway. Have you felt a sense of freedom in this relationship that was absent from monogamous relationships? Does it somehow just feel natural to pursue friendships and romantic relationships concurrently with more than one person? Have you generally made good choices in picking emotionally healthy partners? That's a sneaky one. Do you feel able to manage your time and energy in meeting the needs of more than one relationship? Are you able to be honest with your partners about other relationships and meet their needs for disclosure of important information? Have you generally succeeded in keeping agreements that you have made with your partners? Do you experience a spiritual component of having multiple relationships, and do you feel enriched spiritually by practicing polyamory? Obviously, I think this is just getting a little bit more specific to polyamory. Last one, have other people mentioned that you seem to thrive and be happier when you are in an open relationship? Same thing, give yourself 10 points if you answer a yes, and then if you get over 50 points, probably a little bit more closer to the polyamory end of the spectrum. So the takeaway, or something that I liked from what she spoke about, was essentially like, why do you want to be monogamous or non-monogamous, and get really clear on that. Because a lot of people say like, we're perfect for each other, or like, we're super compatible in every way except for this, or everything's amazing but this thing. And it, like, you can sum it up with so many people in their relationship saying, well, we're perfect for each other except that we're completely incompatible. Some like crucial foundational part of the relationship is like, it's not working. They want monogamy. They want non-monogamy. They want like something else in the frequency of sex, or something else in the values of your life. And it's like, hey, at the end of the day, are you actually incompatible? And if you are, you probably can't say that they're the perfect partner for you. So essentially, it's like, if you're monogamous and your partner's non-monogamous, don't pretend to be non-monogamous for them. And in the same way, if you're non-monogamous and you're with someone but they're monogamous, and so you're just playing along, but ultimately you want non-monogamy, don't do that either. So avoid getting romantically involved with someone who does not share your relationship orientation. This is my favorite bit. Okay. Identifying and grieving your losses in an open relationship. Grieving your losses. So a lot of us are looking for why we would want to be non-monogamous, and not many of us consider what we would lose. We kind of miss out or fail to notice that we have to be giving something up, okay, in order to gain something. In the same way with monogamy, you give something up in order to gain something, right? So this is going to allow you to do your own cost-benefit analysis to make sure you will not be giving up something that is precious to you, thus undermining your relationship and your quality of life. It's important to acknowledge and grieve the losses that you are voluntarily accepting. That was important to me, because sometimes it feels like if you've opted in, you can't feel sad about it. So just reading that, I was like, oh, like I can grieve the part of me that has felt like monogamy was the gold standard, was the best, was the thing that told you that you were the one or special. And so that was just like almost a bit of a relief because it is, you know, there are things that challenge you in non-monogamy. And sort of be reminded that you can grieve those losses. It was like a, okay, that's nice. Okay. So the cost-benefit analysis. What are you going to lose? What are you going to gain? So we do it for monogamous and non-monogamous relationships, or they've just used the term open relationships. And what's interesting is I think, you know, like you probably know what you want in a relationship, but maybe you don't fully understand what you want and need until it's gone. So she writes, the value may not be completely apparent until they are surrendered. And so this is essentially an exercise to open your eyes up to what you're giving up and make sure that you're okay with that. Okay. Benefits of a monogamous relationship: feeling secure, feeling special and unique, believing my partner is attracted only to me, knowing my partner will always prioritize me, having my partner's abiding loyalty and commitment, spending most of our free time together, feeling protected from STIs, the stability of being able to plan our future, feeling safe and open, safe to open to a deep level of intimacy. Costs of a monogamous relationship: feeling controlled or restricted, sometimes experiencing boredom, sexual problems, not enough sex, differences, loss of passion, falling into patterns which can make growth and change difficult, experiencing scarcity of emotional intimacy, time, intellectual connection, affection, sex, or romance. Okay, benefits of an open relationship: more sex, more sexual variety, feeling more free, more privacy in my personal life, more romantic attention, feeling more sexually active and desired, personal growth and learning new skills, bringing out different aspects of myself, more emotional support, more practical support, feeling less dependent on my partner, being more honest with my partner, opportunities for more emotional intimacy, having more choices in life, feeling more alive, greater confidence and self-esteem, feeling of more abundance and less scarcity, feeling more satisfied with my primary partner. Costs of an open relationship: not being sure what I can count on, being demoted from being the one and only, having to negotiate over scheduling, less time and attention from my partner, feeling our love is cheapened or diluted by having other relationships, potential risk of STIs, not having guaranteed access to my partner, fearing that other partners may replace me, knowing my partner is attracted to others, sharing my partner's attention and loyalty with others, having relationship agreements that can change, feeling less secure about the future of my relationship, lots of surprises that can disrupt my life, too much processing about jealousy and other problems. Pretty long list. She says this does not indicate that one type is superior. It's really about how you value those different things. So the next step is to assess the value of each cost and benefit. And one of the examples that she gave is essentially someone that had written out the costs, the benefits, and then her value, but realizing that she had created a comforting fantasy that he only had eyes for her. And giving up that belief would be painful, but was a recognition of the reality rather than any real change. And so that realization made it easier for her. She's also surprised that she felt that staying in a monogamous relationship would have costs, because her and her husband had fallen into some frustrating patterns in their relationship, which made her feel stuck. So ultimately, she described opening up as a net gain, because even though there were losses, the overall benefits were more. Okay, what triggers your jealousy? So this is interesting because it's a drill. It's a very specific exercise. It is a visualization, which I love. I love visualizations. I've used this for training. I've used this for eating. And now we're going to use it for relationships. Okay. Figuring out what triggers your jealousy. We are going to imagine a specific scenario and we're literally going to rehearse and master that situation. So step one, you just need to get comfortable and relaxed. So sitting aside like 30 minutes. Step two, imagine your partner in a romantic situation with someone else. Visualize them initiating the relationship, messaging them, getting excited, this like hypothetical lover. They like make it clear and vivid despite any discomfort or anxiety. Become aware of the sight. So your partner being with someone else, the sounds of their voices, them touching, flirting, smell even. Just get a really full picture of that. Watch the entire scenario unfold. Imagine them together like you're watching a movie. Okay, so like you're on the outside looking in. When they first meet, the initial spark of interest, talking, being on a date, getting to know each other, laughing, having dinner together, hugging or kissing afterwards. You need to pause, like you have a remote control, whenever it feels hard. So any jealousy or discomfort, that's what you need to identify. What is it? Continue to visualize them together and pause when needed. Take it all the way through to them undressing and having sex, whatever that might look like. Walk through it. And then the night and the morning after. So they might sleep over, they might not, it doesn't matter, but there's going to be something that happens at the end where they talk, they might get a little affectionate, cute, and then they leave and they come home to you and you have that connection again. So think through what that's going to be like. And then the final step is to clear the screen. So just take a few steps, take a few breaths and let it all fade away and just imagine clearing the screen. And she goes as far to say, imagine a happy, pleasant experience with your partner and just replace that visualization with a new image. Now you need to write down the triggers. So write down the trigger and what specific emotions you felt at that moment. So when you had to hit pause, what was that trigger? And then what was the feeling? So what's interesting is that people can be surprised that when they visualize this, there's actually specific things that trigger them, not the whole thing. You realize that you're only jealous of one or two pieces, but the overall picture kind of makes it more manageable. And that's where it's like confronting your feelings makes you go, okay, well, this is actually like, you know, I'm making it a big thing, but when I really walk through it, there's just certain things that put me off. So she has some examples where it's like, Kim discovered that the only thing that felt weird was her partner being in their bed. And so their bed's out of bounds, which is what Greg and I do. Mark was realized that he was totally fine with everything except for oral sex. Jessica found that everything was fine except when Will talked to the new woman about his feelings for her. She realized that she didn't mind her partner having sex, but felt really threatened by having him having an intimate conversation with her. So those are the steps of these first exercises. That visualization exercise is it immediately, when I walked through that, it immediately brought up the sensations that I experience when Greg tells me about a date and then goes on a date. For me, when he tells me about a date earlier, it gives me time to process that. And I spoke about on one of our other podcast interviews recently how there is a metabolic process that the body has to go through. There's such a strong like mind-body connection where when we experience emotions that elicit a physical response, there are hormones and there are chemicals in our body that suddenly spark into life and we actually have to metabolize them. And so that's why sitting on something, just taking some time, even just getting a bit of space and just going for a walk or sleeping on it, the next day you can approach that thing with a clearer head and having kind of processed some of the stuff that came up in your body. And so some of that physiological fear has moved and been shifted and been able to channel out of the body. And you can speak to your partner or deal with the challenge in a much better way. And that's a big thing for me. So the more advanced notice I can get, the better. And then the other piece of the puzzle is just knowing what I need. And sometimes it's going to bed early. Sometimes it's staying up and just kind of going with it and just assessing like, how do I feel? What's going to be the best thing? Do I need to actually do some work? Am I good? Am I not good? So I really like the visualization thing because you can take that, you know, through the figuring out what your triggers are. And then you can take it through the, what do you need to do in the moment? So I think you can almost do two versions of that visualization, which is literally exactly what I do for training. I go through it once with the everything that could go wrong. And then I go through it again with the, how do I react? Because I cannot stop the feeling. I cannot stop those thoughts, but I can figure out how I want to react and choose my reaction. I can talk back to those feelings and talk back to those thoughts and operate in a way that helps me deal with it rather than run away from it. And so visualizing that and going through it and doing the drill where you do implement some kind of change, some kind of response or drill or tool that you want to use. And, you know, for some of us, it might be going and finding that multi-amory podcast on jealousy and listening to it while your partner is on a date. And it's a long one, which is good. It's like, I think there's two parts and I think they're both like an hour long. So it takes up a good chunk of time. And it's a nice way to do it. So I hope that this episode is a similar tool for you where you can actually sit down now and go through that visualization, write down the triggers, write down the emotions, and do the cost-benefit analysis. I think walking through that and grieving the losses could be the thing that you need to do. It's okay to feel the sadness or the disappointment or the frustration. Feel that, look at it, fucking face that shit. All right, gang. I'll see you for the next one.